Welcome back in hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Hope everybody's doing well. Enjoyed the Super Bowl last night. We've got a fun segment we'll be doing all week long here, grading the Titans players. We'll get to that coming up here in just a second. Going to start today with the receivers and the tight end, but also, as we know, Joe Rex Road, this next Sunday is Valentine's Day. So in that spirit, it's Love Week here on Robbie and Rex Road, and we've got a bunch of different fun categories to throw out there. And today we're starting with this. What is the worst date experience that you've ever had? So the worst date that you've ever been on, if you would share that experience with us, you can call in or text to the game line at 615-737-1025. Tell us your story now for your chance to win a $1,000 Genesis Diamonds gift card. We'll be listening to those stories on our text line all show long. I think the worst first date or worst date in general could be a pretty interesting topic. I bet there's some doozies out there.
I would think so.
I had a date one time that lasted 8 minutes. I showed up at the restaurant. I had talked to this girl like one time. This was back in like 2012. I showed up. It was a blind date of sorts. She was incredibly rude to the waitress, like immediately from the jump. I cut that off like 8 minutes, and I was like, "Hey, there's really no point in ordering here. Let's just move on with our day. Don't need to take this any further. See ya."
That's a pretty strong move. Like rude. Okay, so like, bring me the bread now, or was it like high maintenance order?
We didn't get to the order. It was just like, "Hey, bring this over here. I asked for this like 30 seconds ago." It wasn't 30 seconds ago, but like a minute ago, and you haven't brought it yet. And we were there for like 5 minutes. I was like, oh, so this is how this is going to go, huh? This is the first time you're meeting another person in public and you can't behave. This is great.
Okay, so I'm just going to play devil's advocate on this.
Okay.
Because, you know.
Also, keep in mind, I was 20 and I was just very hot-tempered at the time.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that's very honorable that you know, someone treats someone badly and you didn't like it. But, yeah. I mean, I'm just wondering, like, did you find yourself attracted to this woman when you saw her?
Yeah, at first. And then she started talking.
Okay.
And that quickly went away.
Because sometimes, I'm just saying, it could have been one of those things where it's like, you know, maybe not. And then you're rationalizing.
No.
The heck out of
no,
there.
She was pretty.
Okay.
Yeah, she was very pretty. All right. And then she started talking. I was like, oh. This is going to be one of those. Okay.
And you just let's move on. All right, that's it. Let's just not even get
Look,
into this.
Ain't got time to waste. When you're 20 years old, you just kind of go play football somewhere or something.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. I don't have a great story. I've racked my brain. An old brain. I don't have a great story, like a bad date, other than like I've been on a lot of dates at like Olive Garden and Chili's, and I'm like, why did we do that?
What?
Well, I mean, just like go to like, you know, there's like other places to, like I don't know, just the choices of where you go.
Look, I've been on a date.
I'm right there with you, Joe.
I took a girl on a date to a baseball concession stand because I wanted to watch my friend play.
But see, but
I don't care.
No, that's
it.
A good date. Okay. No. A sporting event's a good date.
Yeah, but she didn't know I was watching the guy play. I was just like, yeah, meet me at the park. We're going to the concession stand. We can hang out for 15 minutes.
You get her like a pretzel?
Yeah. Not little baseball park fries and cheese, yeah.
Yeah. That's fine. If there's some kind of event around something, even if you have a personal reason for it, but just, yeah, I don't know. I don't have I'm sure there's some great stories out there that we'll get here on the text line. And I'm probably just forgetting something, you know, but no real, like, just disaster dates.
Hey,
maybe I'm, you know, just too much of a Casanova.
Maybe so.
You know? Yeah.
All right.
People's champion, Joe Rex Road.
Long story short, mine was actually at a Predators game.
Okay.
Where the date that I took to the game asked me during warm-ups. All right. So Paul Gostad was on the Nashville Predators team. And he's from one of the Dakotas, either North Dakota or South Dakota. And the girl goes,
those are the two options.
Right. Where's North Dakota? And I was like, are you serious? Like, you know that's a state, right? And she did not know that North Dakota was a state. And I was like, all right, I'm after this game is over.
Did you walk out too? You're like, Robbie? Like, all right, bye.
No, but I I went through the rest of the day, and then that was it.
Porth has a high geographical standard here. You better know where North Dakota is, by God.
That's like... You bring a little map around with you. Right here. Tell me where Montana is. Yeah, you know, that's like those, like Jay Leno would have those, like go out and interview people. And it's like, wait a minute. How did you find 10 people that stupid all in one
segment?
You
better be able to point out Bismarck on a map to me, woman. Yeah. What are we doing here?
Interesting.
I mean, we even went and got dinner afterwards, and I dropped her off, and I said, that is it.
You just tried to avoid geography questions?
All it took was not knowing where North Dakota was. I think that may be more harsh than mine.
I mean, at least he saw it through, though. He saw it through.
Did she not know where it was, she didn't know what it was.
Oh, well, that is
She
bad.
Didn't know that it was a state.
Correct.
Yeah, that's tough.
Did you mention that there's also a South Dakota?
I can't.
You don't
remember.
Want to go over.
Mind blown.
Oh, my goodness, there's two of them. That's a good one, Porth. As always, we'll welcome your text all show long. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Give us your worst first date story. Had some good ones tossed out there so far. We'll take those all show long on our text line. Joe, we're going to grade the Titans players all week long. We'll do it by position groups. And today, starting with the wide receivers and tight ends, let's start with the two obvious ones at wide receiver. A.J. Brown, as we found out at the end of the season, was dealing with injuries all year long, still finished 70 catches, over 1,000 yards, 11 touchdowns. Corey Davis, a career year as well, and an important contract year for him, and some big decisions coming up for the Titans this offseason with him. Let's start with A.J. Brown. What would your grade for A.J. Brown be for this past season, given everything that we now know, the injuries and the production he was still able to have?
I mean, I think of one thing, and I know he got very annoyed by the end of the year with like the questions about the drops. He had a few drops.
He did.
The one drop against Indy was a big drop. Of course, they still end up winning the division. But, man, he was awfully good. Just awfully, awfully good. I got to give him I hate when you start out. You know, you hate starting out with A's. You're like, wait a minute, you got to start out tougher. But if you're going to ask me about A.J. Brown, yeah, I'm going to go A-.
A-?
Yeah.
That's about where I was. A- for A.J. Brown. The only thing was the drops to me. I mean, especially when you factor in he played hurt all season long and he still was that productive. I think if you're a Titans fan, if that guy could stay healthy, you've got to be very excited about A.J. Brown moving forward. So yeah. I would agree with the A- part for A.J. Brown.
You get extra credit, too, for like for giving us the video after the surgery. I mean, that's doing extra credit.
It really almost brings him to an A+.
Just about.
Needs to be a video every time. Every time you're in post-op from a surgery, give us a video. We'd love to see it. Corey Davis, 65 catches, 984 yards, 5 touchdowns on the season. What would your grade for Corey Davis be? Because he was an interesting guy. Very productive, you know, healthier than he's been, really, I guess, through most of his career here with the Titans. Had a tough year off the field, obviously losing his brother, just some really tough circumstances to fight through. And then, I mean, let's be honest, at the end of the season, his production tailed off in the last three games. What would your grade for Corey Davis be?
I'd give him a B, and I think it's a strong B. I do think that when you grade football players in a particular unit, and you have to keep in the context of, so Corey Davis is if the group gets an A or whatever, Corey Davis is still the one in the group project who didn't do as much as the others. And I'm just saying, look, when you have A.J. Brown over there and you have Derrick Henry over there, it's going to help you get great matchups. And I think that's part of his season. So is it fair to knock him down? I mean, I just think if you're going to give A.J. Brown like an A-, I can't give Corey Davis the same grade. So I'm going to go solid B. And obviously the end of the year didn't work out great. Like you said, tough circumstances. And, yes, part of his grade is excellent blocking.
Yeah. Great blocker.
Great blocker.
We'll see how big the Titans prioritize that when it comes to I'll give Corey Davis a B+. I think part of the grading process that I'm going through is – what were they based on expectations? Like, Corey Davis and A.J. Brown are not the same player. I think A.J. Brown is significantly better than Corey Davis. So, I mean, you could give you know, A.J. Brown an A-minus, and you could give Anthony Firkser an A-minus, and it's not the same. Like, they're not graded on the same scale. To me, it's based on expectation. I'd give Corey Davis a B-plus. I think he was largely very, very good this season. He was never, I guess, spectacular or, like, the game-breaking guy, but he was pretty solid week in and week out. The part that drags down to a B-plus to me is the last three games. I mean, he basically disappeared. And I don't know what if there was an injury he was going through and how much that maybe factored into this, but, you know, Green Bay game, he was nowhere to be found. The last Houston game, I thought he played pretty bad in the regular season. And then the Ravens game, I know he left earlier or later in the game with an injury, but was not a factor at all in that game. So that hurts him on my scale. I thought other than that, he had a really good season for the Titans, but I can't go any higher than B-plus based on what I saw at the end of the season.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. It's so we're kind of grading with different things in mind. You're talking about just your expectations and your performance.
Yeah.
I'm talking about, you know, how much are you dependent on others for your performance? I guess, you know, both are fine to take into account, but it's a little bit different. But I agree. I mean, he had an excellent year, and he's setting himself up to get paid.
And when we come back, we will finish off the wide receivers with our grades for last season for the Tennessee Titans and also move ahead to the tight ends as well. All that coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Make sure you're tuning in later this morning at 8:45 for your chance to participate in Preds Pick the Click and win a prize pack brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. We'll have that coming up at 8:45. Joe Rex Road, been highly successful, even though you were in the cellar on Pigskin Pick'em right now, right at the top of the list on Preds Pick the Click. So there you go.
I prefer to focus on things like Preds Pick the Click and Titans Media League Fantasy Football Champion.
I'm sure you do.
I'd rather not talk about how I'm in the toilet bowl of our Pigskin Pick'em contest.
It's okay. There's always next
Do you guys want the final numbers, by the way?
Sure.
All right. I actually tallied them up. Last night, so, you know, we had 10 things.
Yeah.
We had 10 things last night, and Porth had the best performance last night of 5-5.
Of course he did. All right.
So he ends up 52-49, 61 points, 9-10 on locks. Robbie, you went 4-6 last night, 42-59, 53 points, 8 behind Morth.
Brutal.
11-8 on locks, best on locks. I went 2-8 last night.
Attaboy.
Wah, wah. 41-60. I was only a game behind you, 41-60. But 48 points, 5 points back because my locks are garbage. 7-12. My lock last night was Chiefs, -3.
How'd that go?
Yeah. Awesome.
Oh, man.
You let me down, Chiefs.
Congratulations, Porth. Way to go.
Marcus Morth. Munson. Congratulations, Morth. That's right. I want you guys can, you know, maybe we'll have a little parade with you guys.
We'll see. Keep us updated on the victory parade. Getting back
we absolutely will.
The grades for the Tennessee Titans. Right now in the wide receivers, we've given the grades for A.J. Brown and Corey Davis. And perhaps, I guess, the most difficult one or interesting one to try to grade is Adam Humphries, because so much of it is incomplete because he's been off the field for so long while he's been here. 7 games last year, 23 catches, 228 yards, 2 touchdowns. I mean, he was an effective player when he was in there. The problem is, Joe, he's just not on the field all that much.
Yeah, I mean, if I can go incomplete, I'm going there. Because it's exactly, he played well, but like you get hurt like that, and I mean, potentially career-threatening injury here for him. You know, potentially some serious stuff when you have, you know, concussion, and then you get hit again in the head and you're out. So if I'm allowed to give an incomplete, it's hard. It's just, how do you grade him?
Yeah.
I think he was good when he was in there.
I think he was too, but I mean, the fact is, and it's no fault of his, I mean, he got hit directly in the head in Cincinnati, and it was a bad hit, and the fact that there was no flag thrown on it was still just mystifying to me. I was irate about it at the time, but I think incomplete's the way you have to go, and quite frankly, I think we've probably seen the last of Adam Humphries in a Titans uniform. I just don't really see a scenario where he's back next year at the price he's going to be at. And who knows? I mean, who knows if he's playing at all next year?
Yeah, no, I would agree. And, yeah, we'll see in general. I think he have 2 years left on his deal?
Yeah.
I think he does at, is it 10 per?
Yeah.
I'm looking up right now. So
it's a lot of money.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty there's some tough ones here. There's some tough decisions. I wouldn't put that among on the high end of the tough decisions.
And then the last receiver we'll do in the grades before we switch over to tight ends, Khalif Raymond. And he's an interesting guy because he had a great training camp. You thought maybe, I mean, some big moments last year in the playoffs especially. And he finishes the year basically as a non-factor. 9 catches, 187 yards, not a touchdown on the season. You know, Khalif Raymond's never going to be, you know, mistaken for an elite receiver in this league. But with the way the season started for him and how he was at least a factor and they were going to him early on, the fact that he just totally disappeared is disappointing, and I wonder how much of that has to do with the offensive line and Taylor Lewan being out and then not being comfortable going down the field, and how much of that is just Khalif Raymond maybe regressing as a player.
Yeah, look, he had some opportunities that he didn't take advantage of this year. Last year he was this really great story, nice surprise, had some huge plays, obviously. This year he had some success early, but you're probably right that there's probably something to do with not as much a comfort in going downfield and more emphasis on protecting Tannehill. But he had too many opportunities that he didn't take advantage of. I mean, I'd give him like a C-, something like that.
I'm going D.
And I'd put Batson in there too. I think Batson actually was kind of a nice surprise, who kind of took some of that role over. Didn't play a ton, but, you know, I'd give him like a C+.
Yeah.
Something like that. But I think right there is, and it's going to be tougher. Humphreys, by the way, is $9 million. $9 million a year, 4 year, 36, 2 years left on it. But this is where the Titans, not only do they need to, well, try to sign Davis and get a vertical threat, and they're going to need depth and better depth in that room.
I would grade John Robinson's handling of the wide receiver depth as a D at best. I thought they tried to go with what they had way too much across the board, but especially at receiver. And I thought they undervalued what a good depth, you know, number four receiver or number five receiver would be, and almost just banked on Khalif Raymond, what he did in that Baltimore game off that one play, and said, you know, maybe he's going to repeat a lot of what we saw at times last season, and that just wasn't the case.
It wasn't, and I think going through this grading segment highlights how thin they are there. I mean, it's basically A.J. Brown and Corey Davis, and we knew that, but just going through it and looking at the numbers, it was Corey Davis and A.J. Brown, and that was it for the wide receivers.
And you saw a little cameo from Cody Hollister. There's an example of someone that said, we'll go with him. Or you did see more as the season went on, Nick Westbrook-Ikhina. And he did some good things, but yeah, you got to be better at the bottom end. John Robinson has definitely resisted especially in season, trying to go out, someone gets cut, or maybe someone's on the trading block. He's resisted the go get someone mindset. Amari Cooper certainly comes to mind a couple years ago. I mean, I was like, go get that guy. I mean, you are immediately better. That might have to change for John Robinson. But I think this offseason, that's going to have to be addressed. As much as we're going to talk about pass rush being addressed, that's a big one too.
And then switching over to the tight ends, I think the guy that I may be most fascinated throughout this entire discussion to grade is Jonnu Smith, because he's a guy, you look at his numbers, he did have a career year, 41 catches, 448 yards, 8 touchdowns on the season. But he's also a guy where I felt like there's a whole lot more left out there. And because of Taylor Lewan's injury and what they were asking him to do, maybe not quite as productive as he could have been. So as you look at Jonnu Smith, Joe, how do you go about grading a guy who I think has got all the physical talent in the world? I thought this year would be a much bigger factor in the offense than he ended up being. Maybe the circumstances outside of his control. How do you go about grading Jonnu Smith?
See, this gets into, you know, when we get to offensive linemen, it's a lot easier to grade like offensive tackles because you can see in pass pro, but it's very difficult unless you're actually going through the film and you're an offensive line coach. But I think Jonnu Smith is a good blocker, and I give him an A. I give him an A for this year. It's not his fault that he's not involved in the passing game. It's not his fault that his role changes because of injury. I thought he was great when he got opportunities. I can't remember. I'm sure he had a couple drops, but I don't remember him. The guy caught the ball in traffic, was great in the red zone, and I think he's a really good blocker. Now, again, maybe Todd Downing would say, well, if he could give us his grades week by week, say, actually, he didn't block so well in the Minnesota game. I mean, I don't – but from what I saw, I thought he was really good. I give him an A.
I can't give him an A based on the expectations I had for him heading into the season. And, again, I know a lot of this is outside of his control. I can give him a B+. That's where I go with Jonnu Smith. And he did have a big drop in the Baltimore game at the sticks where the 4th-and-2 conversation doesn't even happen if he holds on to the ball and catches the ball at the sticks on that play.
In the playoff game.
In the playoff game.
I don't think he gets a first down there, does
it's
he?
Close.
It's
He's
close.
He's right
it's
at
closer,
it.
But, yeah, he got it knocked out. But, yeah, that's true. That's fair.
And, again, like I said, I mean, you're asking him to hang in and block, so the numbers tailed off toward the end of the year. But just based on the way that I'm approaching this in terms of my expectations, I can't go higher than a B+ with Jonnu Smith. I think he's really good. That, to me, is of all the different things that go into Taylor Lewan's injury and, you know, how they had to hang people in there, seeing what Jonnu Smith could have done if they just went man-on-man blocking and they could leave him more involved in the passing routes, that could have been fascinating because I think he could have had a huge year. I mean, this offense could have been even more dangerous than it already was.
Well, I agree. And as you spin this forward, had he had, you know, more like an 800-yard kind of year or something and maybe 10, 11 touchdowns, would the market be markedly different for him right now? Does this end up helping the Titans retain him?
It could.
I don't know. I know, like in our free agent ranking, Sheil Kapadia, friend of the show, he had Corey Davis way above Jonnu Smith in his overall NFL free agent rankings, and I think people are missing a little bit who don't see how good this guy is. I think the Titans know, and maybe this ends up helping them, and the market for him isn't quite what it would have been.
Last grade of the day, let's go to Anthony Firkser because he's a guy that's very interesting to me. Basically, towards the end of the season, when Adam Humphries was out, like Anthony Firkser turned into their slot guy. Like that's basically what he was. 39 catches, 387 yards, one touchdown, had the huge game, I think it was at home against Houston, where he just absolutely dominated that game, had 8 catches, 113 yards, and a touchdown in that game, but a pretty solid player all season long. What would your grade for Firkser be?
So if I'm going, you're talking expectations and you're sort of like what I assume that also has to do with salary, too.
Sure.
I mean, it's an A.
Yeah, I think he's an
A,
too.
I got to give him an A. And there were times, there were big moments this year, too, where he was part of a key blocking effort for Derrick Henry. I believe in the on the game-winning run in overtime in Baltimore, too. I mean, the guy was excellent, and there's a guy who you don't have to pay a lot for. You want to keep him around here.
But I do wonder, in that discussion, how much of a raise is he in for? Because I do think he deserves some more money. Now, again, you're not talking about a lot of money for Anthony Firkser, but especially with the uncertainty of Jonnu, and we'll see what happens with that, I think he's a guy you absolutely want back if you're the Titans next year.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, and I do think he deserves it. I'm trying to find out what he's making here. I can't seem to find it, but it's not a ton. I can tell you that. And, yeah, I think he deserves a raise. I don't think it's a flash in the pan.
It's 1 year, $750,000.
I mean, give the guy seven figures. Can we get him over seven figures?
Yeah, I thought he was really good. I also would give Anthony Firkser an A. And then you got, you know, Jeff Swaim in there as well. Michael Pruitt dealt with some injuries throughout the year. But tight ends in general, I thought played pretty well this year for the Titans. Big part of the offense.
Yeah. You could make a case that they could certainly afford to draft one.
Yeah.
Try to get another young guy coming in there. It's just, you know, you can talk about a lot of positions that you could draft player and you'd like it. But I thought really pretty good performance overall from that group. And, you know, that's part of Todd Downing probably getting the promotion too, just like Arthur Smith. If your position group plays well, it helps you.
So we'll have grades for position groups all week long in the 7 o'clock hour for the Tennessee Titans, looking back at the season that was and looking ahead to maybe some offseason needs as well. All that coming up this week. And speaking of offseason needs, when we come back, there was a player in last night's Super Bowl that the Titans should 100% pursue, and we'll discuss who that was when we come back. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth are with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We talked about it to begin the hour. It's Love Week here on 102.5 The Game, and we would like to hear your story today about the worst first date that you've ever had. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025 on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Tell us your story, and you could win a chance to win a $1,000 Genesis Diamonds gift card. And we've gotten a couple very good already on the text line. I'll read off one from Austin on our text line. It says, the worst first date was when I was 16. We were going to a concert with a bunch of local bands. I didn't have a phone at the time, and my friend's niece had a funeral service the same day, so I was late to the show. I finally got there and found my date. I went to apologize and got punched in the face. We've now been married for 12 years. Congratulations,
that's
awesome.
See, that's what we're looking for.
That's a good. That's a great.
That's outstanding. I'd like to know, was blood drawn in the punch?
Can you imagine just being there? You show up to the concert. He's nowhere to be found.
Can you quickly recap one of the other ones you got there? The opposite sort of thing.
Yeah, there was one that happened where you go up on a date and fancy questions. You're going out to a restaurant, fancy food, and she's asking all sorts of questions. You end up on the couch and, just kissing each other, having a little fun. And turns out you look at a picture and it's your grandmother. And it's in her
house.
Picture on the wall in her house. And it turns out that second cousins on the couch kissing each other. That's a heck of a story right there.
I really hope these are true stories.
That one, you can't make that
up. You can't make these up, right?
You can't make that up. Second cousins, man.
That's pretty good. Hey. And they're cool.
They're cool now.
Yeah, just don't make out anymore.
That's a heck of a story.
That so is.
We'll take your stories all show long here on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe, I'm watching the Super Bowl last night, and, Tampa Bay's defense as a whole, just out there wrecking Kansas City and their offensive line. Patrick Mahomes was running for his life all game long. But I got to tell you, a guy that we've talked about here on the show that really stood out to me last night, and he only finished with one sack in the game, had four QB hits, and was really in the backfield all game long. Shaq Barrett was outstanding last night. I mean, that guy was all over the place. He wreaked havoc on Aaron Rodgers and the Packers a couple weeks ago in the title game. He was really good again last night against the Chiefs. And Shaq Barrett, a guy who is going to be entering free agency. He finished the season with 8 sacks. He had 19 and a half sacks the year before that. So you're talking about some pretty consistent production now in terms of a guy that finds his way in the backfield with a lot of regularity. I watched that game last night, and I came away from it saying, if you're John Robinson and you don't go after Shaq Barrett, you got some problems. That's a guy the Titans need to pursue 100%.
Yeah, I can't argue with you at all. He looks – it's amazing last night. At one point, I think it was like their second sack. And they said that on the broadcast. I'm like, wait, you mean their 12th? It was their second.
Yeah.
But, this is another.
They might as well have had 10 sacks.
By the way, to bring it back to Joe's Clowney, Heidi, there's a great example last night of how the number of sacks does not always convey what happened in a football game, right?
Right.
If you're affecting a quarterback and getting him out of rhythm and off his spot and doing what the Bucs did, you can be very effective.
I mean, they finished the game with 3 sacks. It's not a very high number.
Yeah, we're never going to look back and say, remember the 3 sacks the Bucs had? But if you watch the game, the pass rush was the story of the game. It was incredible, and he was a huge part of it. I don't disagree. It's interesting. I'm going to keep referring to, because I'm writing something on the Titans and who they should pursue this week, so I'll probably steal that from you too. But no, I mean, Shaq Barrett's an obvious one. Shiel has him 12th. He has Bud Dupree 13th. Now, Barrett this year, like you said, 19 and a half sacks and 37 QB hits, 6 forced fumbles in 2019. They tagged him. He had 8 sacks. So he went down from 19 and a half and 37 to, in 2020, down to 8 and 16. So less than half the QB hits, less than half the sacks. But like you said, watch him last night, watch him in the playoffs. But is there concern about that big drop in production from 19 to 20?
Yeah, there's concern. And look, he's 28 years old, so probably right in the prime of his career right now. Very similar. He's almost, you know, the exact same age as Za'Darius Smith as well. He's a guy where I think you got to be concerned about that, but he was so dominant in the playoffs. I mean, you're talking about – I realized the Kansas City line last night was banged up and it was not at full strength. That Green Bay Packers line was arguably the best offensive line in football, and he just toyed with them. I mean, he was in the backfield all game long. So, yeah, you're concerned about it, but, I mean, if you're the Titans, can you imagine what a guy like Shaq Barrett could do for your team? Like, how big of a difference that guy – could make for this defense. I mean, you've got to pursue somebody like that.
There's a lot of different possibilities. It's a great free agent crop.
It is.
You talk about, and TD told us, you know, Trey Hendrickson's a guy he likes. Carl Lawson's a guy. Hassan Reddick, you know, so right there, we mentioned Dupree. You got Matt Judon, who, and we'll talk about that later. I mean, what about Ngakoue?
Yeah.
So right there, okay, I just named, what is that, 6-7 names? That's in Shields' top 17 overall, you know, free agents available. I mean, and again, you can go down to Leonard Floyd if you want also, by the way.
Yeah.
So there's, what, 8 in the top 22? It is so hard to find. And the thing is with all these guys, a lot of it is how do they fit into what you do? Like, what would Ngakoue – I mean, like, Ngakoue and Barrett are very different players. So what's a better fit for this defense?
That's a great question. I mean, Ngakoue, you're talking about trying to find a guy that could play next to Jeffrey Simmons? I mean, maybe Ngakoue is that guy. Maybe that's the way you want to go. Like, we've talked about this in terms of it just being an outside linebacker part of this, and that's Shaq Barrett. I mean, he's an outside linebacker. But it doesn't have to just be that. Like, if you want to grab a D end – maybe Ngakoue is the way you want to go. Like, it's interesting to think about that way. Like, if I'm having to choose, I'm picking the edge and I'm going to Shaq Barrett. But if you're John Robinson, like, would it be that crazy to maybe take a swing at both? Like, take a swing at two guys to just how bad the pass rush was? I mean, I know you want to draft a player and bring maybe somebody in that way. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility they take a swing at two guys in free agency.
No, not at all. And, yes, that's the thing. Ngakoue be up on that front and now have, you know, two guys who teams have to deal with. I mean, you have to address it all. You got to have that. You got to have people on the edge. It is amazing. And I think some of the fact that there's so many guys here in this top 50 are edges is because that's just such a premium position.
Yep.
So it also has to do with just everyone's looking for this. You got Justin Houston. You got Melvin Ingram. You know, when you're going down the list now a little bit. You know, Romeo Okwara from the Lions, a little bit of an interesting guy, you know. He had the safety on Tannehill in that game for the Lions. I mean, he showed some stuff. There's a lot of possibilities. Do you know where would you guess Joe's Clowney would be in the top 50, by the way?
I would assume he's not in the top 50, but apparently he is.
Yeah,
so
he is.
46.
Yeah, you're close. 41. He's got him right ahead of Melvin Ingram. And then there's guys who didn't make it. I mean, Denico Autry. The Colts, both of those guys for the Colts are free agents, which is interesting with them. You know, Everson Griffin is another guy we talked about last offseason. I mean, now you're going into older guys
right.
who are – I mean, you've got to – I think you've got to really go after multiple guys here near the top of this list. You really have to, because you just can't, you know, you need to draft too, but how could you trust and really feel great that any rookie out there,
yeah.
all those, a lot of those guys look good, Rousseau and Ojulari, all these guys, but you know a Shaq Barrett will produce. You know a Bud Dupree, if he's healthy, can produce, has done it at this level. I like Carl Lawson a lot.
Yeah.
As a guy you may not have to pay as much to. And another thing we found out over the weekend, Schefter reporting what? The cap's about 181 and 182 projection
yep.
versus the 175 fears. And that's, I mean, it's good
that's
for everybody,
yeah.
but that's, Titans should take advantage of that.
They should. And the bottom line is the Titans are going to have a lot of options. And I agree with you. I mean, I think you've got to go out and get at least one, maybe two guys that have proven it and that they've done it before. So it's going to be very interesting to see how John Robinson views that as they head into this offseason. When we come back, We're going to dive into the Nashville Predators, recap the weekend for the Preds, and also I've got a take. It's time for the Preds to give a familiar face a lot more playing time as they move forward here. We'll discuss that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning. And remember, it's Love Week on 102.5 The Game. And today we would like to hear the story of your worst first date that you've ever experienced. You can text into our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com at 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Tell us your story for a chance to win a $1,000 Genesis Diamonds gift card. We've already got some doozies on the text line so far, so we'll be taking your text all show long here on Robbie and Rex Road. Corey Curtis from News 2 coming up to begin the 8 o'clock hour. Looking forward to that discussion with him. Darren McFarland at 9 o'clock to get into the latest with the Nashville Predators. And Joe, speaking of the Nashville Predators, a tough loss on Friday night against the Florida Panthers. It was basically a game where the Predators scored the first goal of the game. They finally got the lead that we've been talking about. Colton Sissons, a puck goes in off his skate, and the Predators are off and running. And then they get outshot 20-4 in the first period. They can barely find their way through the neutral zone in the second period. And at the end of the game, they end up losing 2-1. And I looked at the Natural Stat Trick, which is basically a website that talks about the analytics and how the game breaks down. They credited the Predators with 8 high-danger chances in that game. If you asked me to go back and watch, you'd be hard-pressed for me to find 8 high-danger chances in that game. It was a rough night, and I think maybe the worst night that the Predators have played, 5-on-5, and I will include the 7-0 loss to Dallas in that. It was bad.
Well, it looked like Florida had way fresher legs. Now, it was a back-to-back.
Yeah.
But it looked like it affected one team. It didn't affect the other team.
And Florida has played fewer games.
Yeah.
Significantly fewer. But it's still pretty early in the season.
That's what it looked like to me. It looked like they just, like the Preds were in oatmeal.
Yeah.
And just very non-threatening. A lot of different ways that they've sort of disappointed already.
Yeah.
Couple key ways that are consistent, but I agree that was not a good performance, and it was just another. I mean, I thought about after that game. I mean, where are they going to finish in this division right now?
It's not looking
good.
Who are they
better than in this division other than Chicago and Detroit?
I mean, right now they're in 7th place. Chicago's in top 4.
Are they better than Chicago right now?
Well, I think that they will end up better than Chicago.
Probably, but I mean, I'll give Chicago credit. They are playing every team tough.
Yeah.
And they went on the road and beat Dallas yesterday.
Yeah. They could have won 2 here. I mean, they are. They do deserve credit. I still feel good about that one. I don't know if I feel good about them finishing ahead of anybody but Chicago and Detroit.
It's not looking great right now. I mean, the other day, offensively, I mean, they couldn't get anything done. They couldn't get to the zone. And you thought maybe, you know, Forsberg just had a 5-point game. Matt Duchene has 2 goals in the game, and we talked about it on Friday. Could this be the type of game that springboards you forward a little bit? And for them to come out that night, the next night, and to be that disappointing offensively, that was very discouraging for me. Like, I've said it. I fully believe in the NHL, not all wins are created equal, and I thought that the way they won that game Thursday night against Florida maybe gives you a chance to build on it. And they came out, and all the positive momentum that you took away from Thursday's game got flushed right down the toilet Friday night in Florida. I mean, I thought I thought it was their worst performance of the season, 5-on-5.
So it's early. It is. But again, 19.6%. Basically 20% of the season's gone. So you said it, that series was really important in terms of where things are going. And now you got to say it again about tonight and tomorrow.
Yeah.
Problem is, how do you feel about, listen, if they can come out and rise up and get points out of this, that's great. But, I mean, they could be sitting here at 5-8 real fast.
And the one positive I took away from Friday night's game was Pekka. I mean, he was awesome. 34 saves in that game. As I mentioned, I mean, they're outshot 20-4 in the first period and were winning after the first period. Pekka, I thought, was awesome in that game. And John Hines kind of talked about it yesterday at practice. There's an interesting situation brewing right now at goaltending between Pekka and UC Saros. How are the Predators going to handle that moving forward? Here's what John Hines had to say.
How much has Pekka's play of late kind of made you, I'm sure you probably had some sort of plan, but how much has Pekka's play made you rethink the plan as far as the goalies are concerned?
Yeah, coming in, Jared, it was one where we were going to, you know, we truly said it was going to be a healthy competition. And, you know, you could see Pex was a little bit different when he came back, you know, from this pause. I think he's just in a really good place. I think last year was hard for him, just going from a starter playing every night, and then Juice kind of took over the load. And, you know, it's a big challenge for a guy that's played as long as he has, and he's so used to playing, and he wasn't in that role where you're not playing every night. It's a totally different day, totally different practice, all those types of things. But he's come back. He looks good. He's in a good mental state. And to your point, he's played very well. And you know, he's really making a push to, you know, I would say right now it's a 50-50 split, and he's really, you know, making a strong case for himself to be the number one guy.
So you hear John Hines talk about Pekka making a strong case to be the number one guy. And I'll be honest, based on what I've seen so far, I don't think it's particularly close. I think Pekka Rinne has been by far the better goaltender up to this point. Now, you look at the numbers, they're not great for either guy right now. I mean, you're talking about a .277 goals against for Pekka and a .902 save percentage. Those are not great numbers. I mean, Saros is in the threes with his goals against average and in the eights with his save percentage. So neither one of those are going to blow you away. I think with the eye test right now, Pekka's on a different level than Saros is. And part of it is this. I mean, you need a big part of this year was going to be, all right, what is UC Saros? I think we all would agree he's a good goaltender. He's a good NHL goaltender, and I still feel that way. But can he be a franchise NHL goaltender? That to me was the question heading into this year. There's still time. He's still young. I still think he's got a lot of ability. But so far to me, the answer is no. I don't feel good about UC Saros being the franchise goaltender at this point based on the way things have gone. You need your goalie, if you're going to have a franchise goaltender, he needs to bail you out more consistently than Saros has. I understand at times the play in front of him has been awful, and it has, especially on the penalty kill. But you need your goaltender to bail you out more frequently than Saros has, and until he starts to do that more consistently, I don't know how you can feel great about him being the franchise guy.
Yeah, I agree. Listen, I'm not surprised that this would happen at some point this year because goalies get hot and they get cold, and we knew they were pretty close still. So I'm not surprised that at some point this season, Pekka Rinne might get more starts over a stretch. We'll see if that continues. I mean, those statements by John Hines are pretty strong. 50-50. We know it wasn't 50-50 going in.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to see a flip-flop for at least a little while. But look, overall, big picture on Saros, I mean, felt that way after the playoffs. After the bubble, it's like he was good, but there was like a goal in each game. Like, if you're going to advance in the postseason, can't go in. And, I mean, look, the draft told us something about that too. And you can always say, well, you just can't pass up a guy there. But
yeah, but if you feel great about Saros, you're not taking that guy.
Exactly. You're not taking Askarov. So, I mean, I think Saros is probably a bridge player of some sort. But if this team is going to make a push and get to this postseason, he's going to have to just play better. I mean, it's kind of amazing to think about what they did and talked about on the front of being harder to play against, being more defensively sound, being more responsible, et cetera, et cetera, and then seeing these goaltending numbers. And I know a ton of it is penalties, penalty kill, power play goals, but those numbers are still pretty bad.
They are, and I'm very fascinated to see how the Predators handle this week. I mean, you've got a game tonight against Tampa and then tomorrow as well. So you would figure both goaltenders are going to play tonight and tomorrow. But then you've got a couple days off. Detroit comes in on Thursday and then Saturday as well. Like, if Pekka plays three of the next four, I think that tells you a pretty loud statement from John Hines at that point.
Yeah, it does. Would you be surprised? I still would kind of be surprised if they went Pekka, day off, Pekka. Maybe not, though.
I think they might.
They're in a position right now where they need every win, every point that they can get. And if in these next two games, in my opinion, if Pekka Rinne outplays Saros again, result notwithstanding, because it's Tampa Bay. But if the eye test shows you Pekka is still playing a lot better than UC, I would put Pekka out there Thursday and Saturday against the Wings.
Just give him, plan on giving him both games against the Wings.
Yeah, it's going to be really fascinating to see it, but I think Pekka has earned some more playing time, and I think he's going to get it as the Predators move forward here. So it's going to be interesting to monitor that starting tonight against Tampa Bay. When we come back, our friend Corey Curtis from News 2 will join us. We'll get into the Super Bowl with him, the latest on the Tennessee Titans as well. All that coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.